It's Mike Shope.
Last night at 12:30 in the morning, I ate a can of mushrooms. I did. Pieces and stems, if you're wondering. As opposed to buttons. It was pieces and stems, which will be my next year's fantasy football team name.
Pieces and stems.
Pieces and stems.
And the Bulldog.
I should be ashamed to admit this publicly, but whatever. How long have we been doing this? I'm a junkie. I can't be trusted.
On WGR Sports Radio 550.
I was at a family party on Friday. I told you about it because we did a bunch of division winner parlays.
Mm-hmm.
And my niece's husband is from Cincinnati. And he knows what I do. He's like, do you know Joe Goodberry? Right. And I took a little bit of liberty. I said, yeah, we're friends. He's like, really? Can you get him here to this party? Can you get him here? Because he must have known, Joe, that you lived in the area. And I said, no, I'm not going to make that effort. This is a family event. So I hope it was not offensive to you that I said you were my friend.
No, that's not at all. That's very cool. And yeah, you could send a text. That'd be cool. I make party invites and do like kids' birthday parties and stuff like that. So yeah.
All right. Maybe next time I will.
You've got Joe's number in your phone. See, I only know Joe.
I don't know.
I only know Joe through Zach, and before Zach, Sneaky Joe, and I don't know how long we go back, Joe. And I doubt that you have a list of producers of ours who've called you over the years.
I don't have it.
This is how I know you. I don't. I don't know that I would say we're friends. I would certainly say I know you. But the next question would be, can you get him here? Like, no, I don't have his phone number. Therefore, we're not friends.
Well, wait a minute. If you know him, you should be friends, but you just haven't met him. And it's hard to – that was my hang-up.
Yeah,
was hard to say you're friends with somebody that you've never met. That was my problem. Right. Is that what you're saying, too?
Basically, yeah.
Okay.
You can know people and not be friends, but are they your friends just because you know them, or are they friends because you've shared moments and times together? That's a tricky question.
All right, we'll go. Well, let's say yes to that last part and go from there. Let's say
okay.
We've shared conversations.
I certainly want. I don't want to come off as too desperate or needy here, Joe, but I certainly want us to all be friends.
Yeah, that's where we want to end up.
Well, we're just going to have to schedule a day and we go get some wings or something.
Let's do it.
That's a plan,
Joe. So Joe, a preeminent Bengals analyst with us on the Western Hotline. How are you choosing to define expectations for the Bengals this year? I think they're tricky. Because they've been down in the standings, but the upside is really there. And when I see that they're favored in 15 games, I feel like just saying making the playoffs is light.
Yeah, I was trying to temper my expectations and maybe how I presented them to other people for a while because the defense still after free agency, I didn't feel great about it. And then the Dexter Lawrence trade kind of ruined that for me. I bought in. I was like, man, that's, you got to premium piece on your defense, that could be huge for you. That should at least get you moved up to 16 to 20 in the defensive rankings instead of 30 to 32nd, which they've been for the last 3 years. And I start to go, okay, well, let's really look at this team. And when Burrow's been healthy, they've been good, and they score a lot of points, and they're competitive. It's really been the two injuries, I guess you can say probably three, two injuries in 2023, and then last year getting hurt again with the turf toe. It really sapped their potential for what probably should have been prime years for Joe Burrow's career. Now he still has a few more of those. He's not old yet, but at the same time, you're looking at it like, man, is the pressure there? Do they feel it? Can they see it? Is that why they're going to get Dexter Lawrence? Is that why they're spending money in free agency? Is that why they're restructuring Joe Burrow? And I assume another move is coming with that extra cap space. And if so, maybe 15 games isn't crazy, especially when you look at the schedule. It is not tough at all. So I'm starting to get carried away a little bit, and I don't know if that's just the summer and the football season needing to get here that's allowing me to do that.
Forgive me if this ends up being a stupid question, Joe, but what's your read on, the vibes around Burrow? It felt like as last year was ending and even into the winter and early in the spring, there's this concern, and maybe this is just Bengals fans being panicky the way Bills fans used to be panicky about, the team leaving or players not wanting to be here. Is there any anxiety about Burrow ending up at the Carson Palmer space on the board?
There is some of that, of course, especially if you've been a fan for a long time. Now, half of the viewers and readers and, you know, people that consume my content jumped on when Burrow was here. So they're kind of fuzzy on the Carson Palmer story. But it was very similar to this. They went to the playoffs the first 2 years. Things felt great. You had Chad Ochocinco, TJ Hushmanzada, Rudy Johnson. Like, you had a stacked offense with a timely defense. And he was the golden arm prospect, number one overall Heisman winner. Everyone felt really good about their potential to get there. And then they don't make the playoffs for three straight years. And Palmer hurts his UCL, misses almost all of 2008. And they have to rebuild and get back to competitive football in 2009. And then things went downhill after that. And they brought in T.O. 2010. And everything just got crazy. And you could see the Bengals were never really going for it. They were never really pushing the chips all in. And Palmer got frustrated with that, and things fell apart, and it hit us like a brick at the time. So could you see it happen again? Of course. I have scars from that, from thinking you're going into the season with one thing, and then you get the Andrew Luck pulled right in front of you. So, you know, it happens, and it is something to be wary of. But at the same time, looking at the contracts, looking at how feasible it would actually be to do these things and how conservative the Bengals typically are and how tight they are, really, in a lot of ways. They didn't want to trade Palmer originally until someone finally offered two potential first-round picks, ended up being a first and a second. There's really no space to do it for another 2 years. And I don't think Joe wants to leave Jamar and T as they're really pushing to get them paid, and they got paid. And everyone's here, and guaranteed money is still there for the next year and a half. Like, that, I don't think it's happening anytime soon. But it's not a coincidence, I don't think, that the Bengals were like, okay, let's make some all-in moves in this offseason, try and right this ship.
Yeah, I'm glad you got to Higgins and Chase there. I mean, you know, keeping both of them, I can remember talking to you over the years that, like, we just, I just never thought that was a great idea to invest that money there. But I wonder how much organizationally the concern of, you know, making sure they keep Burrow happy. Certainly any team with a franchise quarterback wants to do that. I wonder if, like, acquiescing eventually to keeping both of those receivers played a bigger role in that than maybe it should have.
Some of the most interesting comments this offseason was from general manager, de facto general manager is what we call him, because it's really still Mike Brown, but Duke Tobin runs the show. And he had a postseason and after the season press conference going into the offseason. And he was pretty stern in his response when everyone's like, you feel the pressure to put things around Burrow, to make it right around Burrow, to build the right team for Joe, all these things. And eventually he kind of cracked a little bit and said, well, our quarterback also has to stay healthy, and he has to win these games in big moments at the end. And then he continued to talk about how they can fix the rest of the roster around him. But I thought that was important because, you know, there, if you leave excuses on the table, I think the fan base will generally side with the player for a long time, especially the franchise quarterback. But once the excuses are kind of gone, you've paid your weapons around, you got Jamar Chase, you got T. Higgins, you've got Mike Gesicki, you got Chase Brown, you're bringing back all five starters on the offensive line that played much better. This is the best offensive line in Burrow's career, for sure. And then now we've made moves in free agency. You brought in big free agents, two starting free agents on day one of free agency. You make a big trade 10th overall pick for Dexter Lawrence. You make moves there to ensure that the defense is much better. Well, now the pressure is off the organization in a lot of ways, and it's normally squarely on the organization. I think the pressure is even less on Zach Taylor because we've seen Taylor get an okay roster. They weren't great. No one expected them to make the Super Bowl in 2021, and I don't think people love Zach Taylor on the outside. The organization does, but I think the pressure is off him a little bit and more on Joe Burrow, and it's on Jamar Chase, and it's on T. Higgins. Like, we've paid you guys. It is time to make plays at the end of the game to win these big games and to stay healthy, of course, for Joe Burrow, which, to me, that I find that exciting. I find that, like, okay, let's put it on the players. Let's see what they do. Let's see how they respond. This is, you guys were having a conversation earlier about greatness, and to me, greatness is different than being the best. Like, Joe Burrow's the best quarterback they've ever had, but is he the greatest? He's not there yet, and I would like to see him get there through these big moments and answering the call when they need it, and we're going to have another shot at that this season.
Oh, man, there's so much to work with there. What is Anderson without the one Super Bowl appearance? He was so good, like criminally underrated, they say, Ken Anderson.
No doubt.
I'd love to play with that. Interesting how the Bengals and the Bills can be compared with each other on this front. How when if this isn't going too far, Joe, like when organizations just are, their reputations are so entrenched for losing or, you know, being frugal, or if that's even different, just what they were. And then you get a quarterback, as these two teams both did, that looks just like almost too good for the organization. Just, you know, this is impossible. How they almost always get the benefit of the doubt. Allen has had his share of big game losses too, but rarely does anybody really blame him. I mean, once in a while now, Denver was, what, turnovers, and they scored 30 points.
I've been
points.
Kind of pushing back on it the whole time. Like, it was always McDermott and the defense. I'm like, I got the ball with a minute to go. Come on, I expect to win one of these.
There is that school of thought, yeah. But there's also, like, for every one of those phone calls we get 30 about Brandon Bean.
Right.
And they're 98 and 50, not including playoffs in the last 8 years. So the Bills and the Bengals, I think, are both teams where a great superstar quarterback can maybe get away with a lot. Not that they necessarily shouldn't at times, but that's almost never, the blame almost never seems to reach them.
I think you're 100% right. And I hear the conversation about the Bills all the time being here. So much of it was on McDermott after these games, right? How many calls did you get on McDermott? Well, now that's not there. If people like Brady, and we'll see how he goes as a head coach, but you could see maybe a little shift towards more of an eye on Allen. And now maybe the excuse is still there that, you know, he doesn't have the weapons, but you make the trade for a receiver, you continue to add to that side of the ball, and at some point you got that conversation may go there, or the angst may go towards Josh Allen.
Yeah, well, and the coaching change plays into that in more ways than one, because it depends on how you want to perceive it, but Brady, I think in a lot of fans' minds, is Allen's guy, right? He was his quarterback's coach. He got elevated to coordinator when that opening came, and they've hired him as head coach. Of course they're not going to hire a guy as the new head coach replacing McDermott after 9 years that Allen doesn't want. So he's sort of on the, I don't know, he's on the spot now with Brady, I think, to some extent.
And again, like I said, I think that's fun. I think that's okay. Right. If you're looking at it and saying, I want drama, I want to see this guy, I want to see our franchise, our golden boy here with the ball in his hands, down by 6 points with a minute and 40 to go, with one timeout in the AFC Championship game, I want to see that. These are the moments that you remember forever. You want the pressure. You want the spotlight on them. You want them in primetime games so that everyone can watch what we watch for 17 weeks and say, look at this guy. Look how good he is. He is everything that I've been waiting for this franchise, and you just want him to come through in those moments. But to get to that moment and have that pressure is a privilege.
With Joe Goodberry, you mentioned referenced Burrow's age earlier. It might be interesting for people to know he is older than Lamar Jackson. He was drafted 2 years later, but he is a month older than Jackson. Burrow's 29, Jackson's 29, Allen and Mahomes are both 30. Allen just turned 30. Herbert is 28. Nix is 26, even though he's not been in the league for very long, but he came in old. Lawrence is 26 only. Mm. May is 23. Anyone else I want in the AFC? Watson is 30. By the way, Watson is only 30, so.
I don't want him.
You don't want him? Forget I mentioned Watson. Joe, that schedule, wow, it's funny how it works. I'm not sure this is the only time in the rotation where a team gets both South divisions, but so many times those are the weak spots. And the AFC North.
The ones you're waiting for, right?
Yes, like every 4 years. And sometimes it just feels like this is always the case where that's really soft, but that's what you've got. We were talking, maybe you were listening, we were talking about the one seed, about the Bills, as we always do every offseason. And I think Cincinnati is a key team in this because you need the other divisions to be competitive, I think, probably, so that one team just doesn't run roughshod through it. And the Ravens, or even the Bengals, I suppose, if the Ravens slip, maybe Baltimore is a team that's dangerous in that way. I don't know. I don't think the AFC West will have that. I think it's too good. And if Jacksonville and Houston are both good, then maybe the South won't either. The Bills might need Cincinnati in a weird way to hang around and, you know, battle Baltimore to end up with Buffalo as the one seed. And maybe that's, you know, the other way around too. You might feel like you need New England.
Yep.
Exactly what I was going to say. It's kind of like the, you know, you when the Tom Brady era Patriots were going, and they just ran through the AFC East. It was like, okay, they're going to win 14 games, right? Just because they'd go pretty much almost every time 5-1 or 6-0 in the division. Well, yeah, and the AFC North has been so tough for a long time. Hopefully the Steelers are taking a step back, or maybe more indecision, and not taking a step forward with Aaron Rodgers. Hopefully not, and for my sake. But, you know, if you can look at Baltimore and say, I don't know that they got better in a big way. I mean, Trey Hendrickson is a great pass rusher, and they had some pass rush issues last year. But they have a lot of holes, and that offensive line has a lot of issues still. They need a lot of young guys to step up and step their game up in a big way and become big players for them. But if I were just looking at the rosters and saying one for one, the Bengals are probably edging out the Ravens just a little bit. I think the Ravens are still slight favorite from betting odds, but I think it's really, really close. And for the Bengals specifically, they need to come out hot again. That story hasn't gone away, really. I think they are two different offenses a lot of times early in the year versus what they end up being. Midpoint and then, you know, towards the end of the year, they seem to be a team that figures it out as they go. But that's going to ruin your chance of getting a number one seed or fighting for it. If you're starting off 1-2 or 2-2, well, it's, you know, the one number one seed, you better rattle off 10 wins at some point to catch yourself back up to it. And the Bengals really haven't shown that early season get off the way that a number one seed typically needs to have.
You know, Joe, anytime we visit with someone who covers and talks about and writes about another team, I'm going to pop the Our Lads depth chart open on my desktop. And It really stands out looking at the Bengals on offense and on defense. And this isn't surprising. It's just another way to make an example of how much work they felt needed to be done on defense. The starter column on the Our Lads offense is all the same color. It's all guys that have been there. There's no purple, there's no green, there's no orange, there's nothing. It's all static, right? There are three spots on the second team offense where there are draft picks, and they're all mid-round guys, fourth through sixth round. The defense, on the other hand, has four new guys in the starter column, all free agents, and then there's three more guys on the second team, two draft picks and another free agent. So you got seven guys, you know, seven spots on the defensive depth chart on the first, you know, two rungs of it that are new. Obviously four starting spots. So that just really jumped out at me. I very rarely see that kind of disparity team to team when, you know, I'm doing this exercise looking at whomever we're talking to. But it really stands out with you guys.
There's one player on defense left from the 2021-2022 2 years of Super Bowl AFC Championship, and that's B.J. Hill at defensive tackle. Everyone else was either drafted in 2022 or after, didn't play much. Dax Hill was 2022, didn't play much his rookie year. So everyone pretty much is afterwards. And you're right, it's a lot of free agents, and it's a lot of guys they drafted in the last 2-3 years. They have seen the writing on the wall. I think that part one was that they knew if they're going to pay Burrow and Chase and Higgins, they're going to have to invest through the draft on defense, and they're going to lose some free agents along the way. And so that was prepared for. They tried to draft a bunch of guys. A lot of them did not pan out. And when you do that, you're in a hole right away. So what they have to do to counteract that, they had to go out in free agency, and they had to get guys like Jonathan Allen and Dexter Lawrence and Boye Mafe and Kyle Duggar and Brian Cook. If those guys can pan out for you, if they're veterans that can stabilize you, I don't think there's a better one-for-one replacement in free agency than, no offense to you guys and to Geno Stone, but from Geno Stone to Brian Cook, from one of the worst tacklers in the league, and effort-wise, Stone is probably the poster child for a lot of Bengals fans for their defense the last 2 years. To go to Brian Cook, who's one of the better tackling free safeties in the league, very steady player for the Chiefs the last 3 years. He's been there 4 years, but last 3 years starting. That one-for-one replacement at that position where the Bengals have a lot of issues since losing Jesse Bates and Von Bell, they're expecting that to be a big boost to their communication and what they can do on the back half again, the way they used to when they had good safeties. That's the big one for me, other than Dexter Lawrence, we already talked about. But the pass rush, big for them. After losing Trey Hendrickson, they brought in Jonathan Allen at defensive tackle, who was probably playing too many snaps, former first-round pick. They think they can reduce his snaps and get him in a pass rush role and extend his career. Boye Mafe, coming off a Super Bowl run with the Seahawks, very good postseason as an edge rusher, day one signing as well in free agency. And then they draft Cassius Howell, out of Texas A&M with their first pick, which they have a second-round pick, who is a pass rush specialist. So I think they're going to try and manufacture it with a wave of eight guys coming at you rather than just Trey Hendrickson.
Just a couple minutes left with Joe Goodberry. You slipped in a reference to the Steelers earlier. What do you actually expect?
I don't know, to be honest. They're a collection of individual talents that I like and players that I like. Like, on his own, I like DK Metcalf. On his own, I like Michael Pittman. On his own, I like Jaylen Warren. But together, the offense was dysfunctional in a lot of ways, and that's why they probably went out and got McCarthy and wanted to start over on that side of the ball. The offensive line's got some issues in terms of – I thought they secured their interior offensive line the last couple of years. And then Troy Fautano, their former first-round pick, probably going to play left tackle. They spend their first-round pick on a right tackle this year, so maybe that'll get secured and they'll be okay. I like Darnell Washington as a player at tight end. I like Pat Freiermuth at tight end. So as a collection, I like the individual guys on offense. You can say the same about the defense. They have individual stars on that side. But something seems dysfunctional, or did, under Tomlin at the end there. And maybe that's the boost they need to recover and just reset things by getting McCarthy in here. But I'm not a big fan of Mike McCarthy. I thought his offense was archaic in a lot of ways, very stagnant, not a lot of motion, not a lot of creativity. They're not going to scheme a lot of things up. So you need these weapons to make plays one-on-one. And maybe they have enough to do that. But overall, I don't think it's a very good roster. And I think they've got some really exploitable holes that I hope the other teams can take advantage of. I'm tired of seeing the Steelers get into the playoffs with a winning record, and maybe it'll be different without Tomlin, and then just get absolutely destroyed in the wild card round.
That's another thing that's annoying, isn't it? And Baltimore would feel the same way, maybe these last couple times when Pittsburgh gets in.
Where are you on Baltimore, Joe?
They're going to be a pain because Lamar Jackson is a freak show at quarterback, and still, and he's gotten more efficient as he's gone on, and that means their offense is going to be good, despite holes on the offensive line, despite not having – I mean, Zay Jones is a good receiver, but is he like an alpha number one? I don't know if he is. I don't know if you need one, especially when they can run the ball the way they do and they have good tight ends with Mark Andrews. They lost Isaiah Likely, which I think will actually be a big hit towards them. But on defense, I think they're slow at corner. They're getting older at that position. They were exploitable at safety last year, and their pass rush was bad. But they got Trey Hendrickson, so that does that offset. Can that get them back where they need to be? I think they're going to be tough because, again, they got Lamar.
Joe, I'm glad to hear the friendship seems to be trending up. The season's still a ways away, so hopefully we get to talk to you again before then. What's the best way for us to help you make money? What can we tell or have you tell people to subscribe to Joe Goodberry?
That's a great question because I just put my notice in at my day job of 11 years. And so that's over because I just started and am now one of the co-hosts of the Locked On Bengals podcast.
Oh, good for
along
you.
With the other things I do. So it's kind of offsetting. And if I'm not going to take the leap now, when am I going to do it? I'm 39 years old and I've been doing this. This is my 18th season covering the Bengals. Best place to find me to find all of that is on Twitter at Joe Goodberry.
Congrats.
Yeah.
You got to.
Good to hear.
Thank you.
Feel good. Maybe it's a little bit nerve wracking, but that's normal.
Sure. Yeah.
Got to be taking the plunge, but liberating too. So good for you.
Thank you.
Not to, give away too much. So many people I know have bet on themselves, as they say, and made it work. And I know from your following, you'd be a great bet on having that happen as well. Thanks for today, Joe.
Thanks, guys. We'll talk soon.
Joe Goodberry on the West Her Hotline. The Bengals open with the Bucks. They've never played,
I believe that.
Tampa Bay, much orange. Tampa Bay and Cincinnati meeting for the first time ever in week one. The Bengals play the Steelers weeks 3 and 10, and that week 10 game is a Sunday night. Pittsburgh will be coming off a bye. The Baltimore games are weeks 7 and 17 for Cincinnati. The one interesting schedule thing in that division, I would say, is that Baltimore and Pittsburgh don't play until late December. Weeks 15 and 18 are those two games, which is funny because that'll be the score.
Right.
18-15 will be the score of both of those games. All right, time for a break. We'll have Sal in an hour. Plenty of time to talk before then. 803-0550, Mike Schoep and the Bulldog, WGR. Caller 5 at 716-221-4WGR, that's 4947, has a chance and a $50 gift card to Connor's Restaurant on Seneca Street in West Seneca. Every Wednesday, score four Connor's Beef on Weck meals for just $55 or one for $15 because Connor's is better.
Giddy up.
Do you win or do you just have a chance to win? I'm just reading what it says. Hopefully you win, but I don't know for sure. It just says you have a chance to win. I'm not in charge of this.
Yeah, me either. It's a tough question to ask me.
For now, it's just that you have a chance to win.
Right.
Hopefully you win anyway. Game four of the Stanley Cup Final goes to Carolina. They get out in front and now are going home 2-2. Do you think it's possible that Mitch Marner could win the Conn Smythe if the Hurricanes win the series?
Ooh. The fact that Anderson has come out, like, I think if he'd kept playing here, like, didn't get pulled, and Bussy didn't play last night, even if they'd just gone back to Anderson last night and won the game, and he's going to, you know, presumably be the guy for the duration, that would be your guy. But now he's out of the mix. I'm guessing, I mean, you know, Bussy gave up, what did he give up? Three last night, okay.
How did you look?
Fine. Okay. Yeah. Vegas did not have, it was well into like halfway through the game and they were in single digits in shots, Vegas. Like, it was one of those games where,
like, they're playing Montreal again.
Yeah, one team was just not generating much. So it wasn't like he was super busy, Bussy.
He wasn't a busy Bussy.
No.
You're saying.
So Anderson's, I guess the door, because I don't know who the next guy, like, I know you have something on Stankoven, right? And that sort of, I mean, he scored last night.
First goal.
But it cooled off. Like, it was, the playoff started and he was scoring like the first goal of games right away in games. He was on a little bit of a tear there at the beginning of the playoffs, but, you know, we're much further down the line now. So I don't know what kind of candidate he is for MVP. I honestly don't know who's next for them.
Well, I can tell you what the odds
are. Taylor Hall, maybe? I don't know. Slavin, there's no numbers there, but he's, you know, shutdown guy. I think their shots against or scoring chances against last night were like 15-3 or something with Slavin on the ice. I mean, he's been dominant, but I don't know that you're that's the playoff MVP. I don't buy it.
Well, say I'm on a flight right now covering this series. Say I'm Greg Wyshynski,
mm-hmm.
and I have a vote, and I'm going to Carolina for Game 5. And I'm asking myself this question. So far, I think if Vegas wins, there's no question.
Right. I agree.
But with Carolina, it's tough. And I think you're right about Anderson. Anderson was their top odds guy before the finals. And now he's nowhere near. Like, now he's been replaced. Right. Maybe he goes back in, but. So on different sites, it's one of two guys. It's Stankoven or Hall. What I would be doing is I definitely would be looking at the betting markets just to get an idea, like, what are people expecting, and hoping that that does not influence my vote. Maybe if I really did have a vote, I would resist the temptation to do that.
Mm-hmm.
If you go, what I would definitely do is go to their playoff stats, and Hall and Jackson Blake are tied with the most points at 18, and Stankoven has 15, but he has 11 goals.
Mm-hmm.
And you would know that what happened earlier in the playoffs does count. I mean, this is not just a finals award like it is in the NBA. It's a whole playoffs award. So I'm hoping.
Like, yeah. Yeah, I think you're definitely live. I mean, to be the leading goal scorer, if he scores three more goals and they win the cup, maybe you've got it.
I just don't want to do this again after Lindy.
Right.
I don't want to read minds.
Don't assume anything.
Right? I definitely don't want to assume anything.
It's why I think, like, if Stankoven doesn't present himself as obvious, like if he stays at 11 goals, but Carolina wins the cup, you know, it's not unlikely. I mean, it easily could happen. We're talking about, you know, three games here. So Marner has been so above and beyond that. Yeah, I could see people in the press box as the game is winding. Carolina's you know, whenever you got to get the votes in, like, you know, whatever time of the game it is. Carolina's, you know, they're about to get an empty, the goalie's going to get pulled. They get the empty netter. I got to vote. Marner might be undeniable. Again, if Stankoven doesn't add, or any of these guys, I mean, Hall could have a hat trick in game five or something and elevate himself, right? So that's still possible. But if it just goes along and each of these guys pick up another point or two, the goalie thing doesn't switch back to Anderson, so he doesn't have a triumphant return, and it's Bussy. I could land on Marner. I could see it in a losing cause.
Leads the playoffs in assists and points, 10 goals as well, 29 points. I don't know how big a lead that is, but it's probably pretty big. I mean,
yeah, I've not looked at the playoff stats really since the Sabres got knocked out.
Colorado goes out in four. Carolina winning series in, you know, short order. Yeah. So I would think that that's probably a pretty good lead. I'm betting against it with what I have already, a ticket on Stankoven, but I wouldn't disrespect Marner getting the award if they lost. The point is, best player in the playoffs, and he probably has been the best player in the playoffs.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
Maybe by a good margin. But it's these guys don't want to vote for
the losing
guys. Yep. It happened with Jaguar.
Right, it's been goalies. Like, oh, look how strong he stood in the face of being completely overmatched. It wouldn't have been a 7-game series or as close a series, whatever.
They never would have been there.
Right, right.
You can't say that about Taylor Hall, probably.
No, I don't think you can. No.
If Taylor Hall wins the Conn Smythe for Carolina, does he go on the pile? Did we care about him enough? O'Reilly, Reinhart, Eichel. And I think O'Reilly is the only one to win the Conn Smythe of the three.
That's correct.
Still, these were all very important figures in the Sabres' plans. And Hall was not. I mean, Hall was not irrelevant. And it didn't last very long anyway.
Yeah.
But he was not the other three guys.
No. It for me, his having ever been here is more of like, it's more of an aggravating footnote than it is something that him having success now, it's annoying, I guess, but it doesn't even barely reach me. Like, you know, O'Reilly leaving and winning the cup right away, right? Eichel eventually winning, Reinhart, like those were guys that were here that we wanted to matter and be a part of the big turnaround. Like, here we went through the darkness, the tunnel that was the tank, and like, now we got these guys. It's way different than Taylor Hall. Taylor Hall was like just almost like some kind of whimsical dream. I don't even feel like it was real. So I'm way less.
It was a joke.
Yeah, I'm way less mad, or it's annoying, and things that are annoying to me don't really, it's just, yeah. And I mean, I'm choosing that. I mean, I guess I could be madder at him. He plays for Carolina, who I hate, but it the Sabre part of that does not resonate with me hardly at all when I'm watching.
How about Jordan Staal?
Jordan Staal, I just can't stand because I can't stand his brother. So
really,
that
which brother?
That,
Eric Staal.
that works in a different way.
All right.
And he's, you know, he's the captain. He's been there forever. I can't stand Carolina. So by relationship and the fact that he's their captain, he's annoying. Yeah.
I used to refer to him to my wife as her boyfriend, Jordan Staal. When he was he started with the Penguins.
Right.
And she must have said something like, oh, look how cute he is, or something.
Uh-huh.
And anytime. And here he is still playing 15 years later, if not longer, 17 years later. I just have a rookie card that I'm picturing of Jordan Staal.
Yeah.
Like probably 2007.
Are you sure you still have it, or did your wife take it?
I had it in my hands today. That's funny. Well, I mean, she's home now. She might have grabbed it, but I doubt it.
She's walking around with that in her handbag.
I doubt it. Speaking of dreams.
Oh, hey now.
So here's a dream update. Yesterday, I reported having had a dream that the Bills won the Super Bowl. Mm-hmm. And I brought up how I was listening to an audiobook about the history of the NFL in the process. And I feel like that might have had something to do with it. Today, I had a dream. It was like, I don't want to get into the details. I'm not even sure I really could because it's kind of foggy, but it was like a true crime book that I was listening to, I know, or podcast. And in this dream, it was a work situation where something went missing.
Mm.
And I don't think I was being accused of it, but I was trying to figure it out. And then Tim, our boss, was in the 2 days in a row, Tim was in my dream.
Oh, boy.
And he went scrambling to try to figure out how to solve what happened.
Uh-huh.
And then there was also a baseball thing. So I think maybe what I need to know is what should I be listening to at night to have the dreams I want to have?
Right.
I mean, I think maybe we all have the same thought here. But what do I need to find something that helps me to a proper dream. I mean, the Bills one was good.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Did you ever discover if the chapter about the Bills had been playing?
No, I don't even know that there was one.
Okay, all right.
But I thought maybe it was possible that the Bills were in the book.
I thought you mentioned that. Yeah, okay. The possibility, I mean. Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know.
Tim.
Yeah, right.
Back-to-back Tim dreams.
Yeah, I don't know, man.
There's also a baseball element. Did I say that?
Yeah, you did. Yeah.
Trying to figure out the lineup and whoever was reading it wouldn't read the names. It was all just cryptic, and then they disappeared, and I couldn't find out who was batting sixth. Every dream pretty much has a what do I do about this crisis moment.
Mm-hmm.
And I think really the right move is to figure out how to sleep without the audio.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah.
Doesn't seem like that's not how they teach you to sleep. Just put a book on. Do they? Does anybody tell you that that's what you should do?
I mean, you start out as a little kid being read to by your parents.
Do they keep reading after you fall asleep? No.
No, well, right. I would, you know, you see it coming, you can feel it coming. And I would keep going just to make sure a little bit. Like, they're asleep, but, like, let me just, you know. And I'm also I'd like to finish Goodnight Moon. It's not that long a book. You know, let me see if I can get through this.
Oh, yeah. No, sure.
Goodnight Moon. He's asleep, you know.
Even if you're just reading it to yourself.
Yeah, right. I want to finish the book.
What happens to this rabbit?
Yeah.
Does anything happen?
Exactly.
Does the rabbit do anything? Does the rabbit fall asleep? Does the rabbit wake up and cry?
Eventually,
I mean,
probably.
That book wouldn't sell.
No.
If the rabbit at the end wakes up and cries, oh, no. Did I just spoil Goodnight Moon? I hope not. It's been around. You should know. Sal coming up at 5:30. Let's check in on that World Cup draft we're in the middle of here. Any update on that in the last hour? No?
We're at a standstill here.
I mean, just pick a team, you're thinking? Just pick one.
Sal's working.
He's working.
He's talking to Bills, or has been. I don't know.
Then have one of them pick one.
Right. I say just give him Haiti and let's move along. I don't know why Atlanta, but they're in the pool.
Haiti's in it?
Yeah, they're there. Yeah.
Haiti's in the World Cup?
Yeah.
All right. There's a team to root for. What group?
I have no idea. No idea.
I'll find that out on my own here. Mike Schopen, the Bulldog, lines open for your calls. This is WGR.